Good afternoon, everybody. I am so pleased to have you here. I'm Lisa Braithwaite. I'm a public speaking coach and trainer and host of the Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series. And actually, let me just make sure I did not mute myself. No, I didn't. Oh, good, because sometimes I do that. The Audience Avenger Alliance is my membership program, which is for both experienced and novice speakers who want to break out of the routine and stand out as someone who serves the audience in a memorable and engaging way. Our motto is, we liberate audiences worldwide from dastardly presentations by rising above the status quo and delivering bold and courageous messages. And if you are on the webcast today, you'll see that there's a link to the left on the screen to click for the Audience Avenger Alliance to get more information, and I will give you the link at the end as well. So it'll be on the recording. So let me get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way before we begin. The line is muted so that we don't have any noise disturbances, but we do have a Q&A box and a chat feature if you're on the webcast. So you can use those at any time to post your questions or comments to me or to Kari. And if you're on the phone and you're not on the webcast, I will open the line at the end for questions. And if you can't see the chat box or the Q&A box, which happens sometimes, go ahead and refresh your page, and that will usually work. One thing to know that you might get booted out of the chat, which happens sometimes with technology, just refresh your browser and you'll get back in. And if for some reason I cut out or you can't hear me, please post in the Q&A box or the chat and let me know. I do call in from Skype because Skype gives pretty good sound quality, but Skype has been known to drop my call. So just post in the Q&A box or the chat and let me know if you lose me or if you lose Kari. And I'll be checking there regularly. So first, let me say hello to Kari. She's here on the line with us, and then I'll tell you a bit about her. Hello, Kari, and welcome.
Hello, Lisa.
I'm so excited to have you. Let me tell the audience a few things about you. And, of course, there's so much more to tell about Kari because she's an amazingly accomplished person. But here's what I'll tell you to begin with. First of all, she's the founder of the Say It Better Center. And I have links, again, on the webcast. You'll see some links to the left where you can find out more about Kari. And I'll put these in the follow-up email as well. Kari Anderson thinks and writes about becoming connected and being quoted. And these are two of the reasons that I've been really interested in her work and wanted to bring her onto the speaker series. She's an Emmy-winning former NBC and Wall Street Journal reporter and now connective behavior columnist for Forbes and Huffington Post. Kari's TED Talk on the Web of Humanity, Becoming an Opportunity Maker, attracted over 1 million views within 2 months. And the link to her TED Talk is on the left, and I highly recommend that you watch it. It's really, really great about making opportunity for each other and accomplishing things that we may not be able to accomplish alone. When we work together with other people, we can accomplish way more. It's a really great talk. Her clients are as diverse as Salesforce, Nordstrom, the San Francisco Giants for you sports fans, and the Skoll Foundation. She's also a founding board member of Annie's Homegrown, which is a company that I really love, and she's a co-founder of 9 women's political action committees, which I'm super curious about. She's also the author of Getting What You Want, Walk Your Talk, Beauty Inside Out, and Resolving Conflict Sooner. She's on the advisory boards of Glooped, which is a really cool site that allows you to make and release short one-minute videos from your phone, which is really cool. And she's also on the advisory board of Rainforest, Watermark, and TEDx Marin. And here's a quote from somebody, from David Rockefeller Jr., as a matter of fact, after hearing her speak. He says, Kari forever changes how you see yourself and your world. So you'll find links on the webcast on the left-hand side, and I will email these out to you all. She has a blog called Moving From Me to We. The link to her TED Talk is there, and also the link to her sayitbetter.com website. Sayitbetter.com? Did I say that right?
You sure did.
Oh, okay, good. I thought I might have left out a word. So for what we're going to talk about today, what Carrie says is more than smarts, experience, hard work, or even money and attractiveness. Darn it, because I am so attractive, let me just, you know, tell you all. The key first step to standing out and attracting involvement is your capacity to get your ideas heard and shared. And it seems really obvious, right? If we can't get our ideas heard and shared, we're nobody. We're nowhere, right? I mean, I'm not saying we're actually nobody, but to the world, we're nobody. Nobody knows about us. And there's an art and a science to being frequently quoted. And this is what Kari is going to share with us today. So I'm going to jump in. I have a few questions for Kari, and then hopefully we'll go, you know, we'll have some interesting conversation. And I will be looking for questions over in the over on the webcast to see if anybody is posting in our little Q&A area. And I will also check the chat. The nice thing about the chat, just so you know, is that if you type into the chat, Kari or I can type back. In the Q&A, I will read your questions out loud, but there's no way for us to type anything to you. So just so you know, if you're on the webcast, the chat is a little bit more interactive and you can talk to other people on the chat and we can all have a lovely time together. So the first thing I want to ask you, Kari, well, first of all, let me just say this. Is there anything that I didn't say about you that you would like the listeners to know? Because I gave, you know, a lot of things, but there might be other more interesting, personal, fun things that you would like to share. So feel free.
I'd rather dive in and for us to offer some tips that would be helpful to the people participating today.
Great. And I am ready for that. So my first comment and question to you, Kari, is that some people just seem naturally articulate, which seems to be a key part of being quotable. And there are certain people that I see who just every word that comes out of their mouth is just the perfect thing. And I'm just wondering if this, do you think some people are just naturally articulate and are the rest of us just kind of doomed to stumble over our words and put our feet in our mouths? Or is it possible to develop the skill of being more articulate? So that's my first question to you in general.
I believe that people who see pictures in their mind and step into the shoes of the people they're trying to reach are more likely to be specific, vivid, and relevant. And they ask the questions. It's not just what they say, but what they ask and how they respond. So I think when you look at those people that are articulate, there's something about them that want to be more aware, to want to be more connected. And there's several people that tell a story that matters to them, but it's not relevant to the people they seek to serve. So that's like respond to that. But there are specific things that we can do so that what we say matters to other people and they feel that.
Thank you. And if some of you hear typing in the background, that's actually me taking notes. It's just much easier for me to type and take notes that will remind me later of things that I want to either repeat that Kari shared with us or that triggers something else in my mind. So, and that was a great comment. And I really appreciate, Kari, what you said about serving the audience, because this is really a big part of what I teach, that if you come out and all you want to talk about is what's important to you and all you're focusing on is what you think, what you want to share and what you think people need, but that you haven't really taken the time to find out about the people that you want to reach, as you say, step into the shoes of the people that you want to reach, you're not going to connect. You're not going to be heard and shared. You're not going to be memorable because people want to be served. People want to feel like you care about them and that you're interested in their needs and their wants. So I appreciate that you mentioned that. That is a really great tip, just right there, stepping into the shoes of the people that you want to reach. So I hope those of you who
but
are
the
on the call.
The specific thing is proving that.
Oh, yeah?
That's what
I'm
I want
sorry?
To dive in and say. Prove it. It's like being authentic. It's too general. So there's specific ways we prove that we want to connect with the people in the audience and be relevant. For example, one of the things I enjoy doing is asking the meeting planner for people that have done certain things. That is someone who's respected and extremely introverted and someone who's respected and extremely extroverted. When I cite the benefits and downsides of both, I can turn to one part of the audience and say, and you know, for example, Ellen Hsu, and I'm pointing with my hand over to that person, is an extraordinarily outgoing, warm person. Totally opposite of Bob, I don't know the last name, so-and-so, I pointed him. But it's not whether they're outgoing or they're introverted. It's whether they first show warmth and then competence, not the reverse. So there I've introduced a tip that's important, but I based it unexpectedly by favorably and specifically citing people in the audience. And so that the specificity of the tips is what helps your people are listening today say, oh, I get it, I can do that. And the same thing is true about what makes us quotable. Are we specific enough so they can see it in their mind's eye?
I love that. And I do always suggest to people that they research their audiences, and I send out surveys and I try to get to know some people. And you've just given a really specific example of how to actually speak to somebody who's going to be in your audience, speak to some people and find out what they need, want, and care about, or what their experience is. And for example, and I have other questions for you, but I want to jump in with this story. I know people who are really uncomfortable with speaking, and so they say, I wait until the last minute, and then I go in and I get on stage, and I don't mingle with people first, and I don't sit down and have lunch with people first, et cetera, et cetera. And again, if you're not having that personal interaction and learning about the people that you're speaking about, then you're not going to connect. So this is another really great tip, to specifically talk to people and cite those people and refer to those people who you've spoken to. And as you say, that's a way of proving, you know, the relevance and the...
Wait, Lisa, I didn't talk to them. I talked to the meeting planner.
Oh, you talked to the meeting planner.
Because the joy is in doing something unexpected.
Oh, that it was a surprise. Right.
And to honor them by looking at another part of the audience and then turning and pointing at that person to honor them. So it sets it up and then tying it to a specific tip, warmth, then confidence, not the reverse.
Right.
So that's where you can weave in an unexpected part with the specific.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
good. Thank you for clarifying. I didn't quite get that,
sure.
That the people themselves didn't know. And that does make it unexpected.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So, Kari, what are some of the specific ways that we can say or write something so that it is more likely to stick in other people's minds?
I believe the specific detail proves the general conclusion, not the reverse. I turned on the radio years ago when I was driving through the South, and an halting, urgent-sounding older male said, 1 in 3 women in Louisiana who are murdered, long pause, are murdered by their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
If you suspect that someone's life is in danger, call now for help. And then a woman says a phone number quickly and anxiously. Then she repeats it slowly and calmly. And then the man comes on the radio again and says, I wish I'd called. It might have saved my sister's life.
Mm.
And then they say the name of the service you can call if you think you know someone's in danger. The specific story, totally involving, you can't buy it. You have to think it and say it. So that is one of the hardest things to teach. And in fact, increasingly in our culture, when people ask us a question, we give background like underbrush, qualifiers, instead of first answering the question specifically, so there's a thread and that becomes more meaningful. So that would be my first suggestion. There are others, but that's a start.
I love that. So giving specific detail, and that you gave a great example of that from that radio ad, that instead of giving some sort of general wide-ranging thing, you basically get right to the point. Yeah?
It's like saying you want to build trust with people. You want to be authentic, but not pointing out how one does that. So
right.
I would just suggest to people, when you're wanting to make a general statement, and it's really hard, it's a struggle to me even now, first think of the specific incident that proves your general statement.
Okay, I love that. Think of a specific incident that proves your general statement.
Or
love
detail. Or compared to what? You have a compared to what? You say, just as so-and-so did such and such. For example, there's a hospital that piggybacked on a campaign slogan that's had millions spent on it, got milk. So I looked at the billboard, and it said, got blood, and it was the way they're asking people to donate blood. So you can piggyback on something else and be very pithy.
That's interesting. And there wasn't any kind of trademark dispute or copyright or anything about that, about using kind of playing off of somebody else's tagline?
Two things. If it's not their quote, then it's fine. But second, what better flattery and to remind people why it's familiar? So it's positive. I call this technique compared to what? When you're comparing one thing to another. It's like years ago, I was coaching someone who stood up on the stage to do a 20-minute talk where everybody's talking very fast. It was biotech. And when he rolled up his shirt sleeve and he pointed at his elbow, he said with a sweeping arc, the effects of this patch when it goes in the market in April will be felt faster than a Porsche can go from 0 to 90. Compared to what? So it's a visual billboard. His body was a billboard for what he's saying. And it was an aspirational comparison because the people in the audience at that point thought Porsches were the coolest thing. So it's just when you sort of sidelong glance at your world and say, how do I compare my main point to something startlingly different but credible, something that matters or is familiar with the people with whom I'm trying to connect?
That's great. I love that. So, and I love, and I've seen other examples of takeoffs on the Got Milk campaign, and there are a lot of companies who are going to jump in and send out cease and desist letters. But I like the way you put it, that this is actually it reminds people of the original, and it's flattering to use the original. And so you're actually doing the original company a favor by piggybacking on their quote or something that people are already familiar with that they put out there.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. Kari, what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when they're attempting to be memorable in what they say?
I believe it's not offering a purposeful narrative where people see a role they want to play in the story. It's not offering something where if I share it or I act on it or I buy it, I feel better about myself. For example, that Al's, the ice bucket thing, where I throw in a bucket of ice water on somebody else and cite three people I want to do it to. So people did something quirky, not comfortable, but extremely visually vivid. And if I was named as one of those three people, as many of us were, you feel obligated and, in fact, honored to replicate it. So specifically, offer something where there's built-in bragging rights. Do something where they can build on it, and they look good and they're proud of that.
Oh, I love that. Everybody wants to look good.
Well, I think we don't want to look bad, and so it's just funny that we don't build them more in. There's a convention coming to San Francisco. It's the Global Meeting Planners International Group, and it's just, you know, those are meeting planners and hoteliers and venue managers. For the first time in Moscone Center, this is how it shows you. Quotability is visual and verbal. We're projecting onto this gorgeous wall where you first walk in all these great scenes of San Francisco, and one of my favorite is actually the Golden Gate Bridge. Some people won't have the chance to walk over it, but they can have the chance to walk in front of it in this image and shake hands or hold their wave at people and say why they love San Francisco or why they love being a meeting planner. And other people are going to video it. They're doing selfies and they're doing videos of each other. So what do you set up so that people want to talk about what you think is important? Use your senses, whether it's touching something, turning on it, adding something to a bowl, taking a saying out. Quotability is something where people participate and want to talk about it later on. It's not always just the words we're saying. In fact, I have something called air. It's a formula for making your message almost as valuable as oxygen. Does it have these three elements? Is it actionable? Does it have interestingness, like that 1 in 3 women in Louisiana? Mm-hmm. And is it relevant to who you want to reach? Extremely relevant.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to ask you about that. I saw that on their website, on your website. And I mean, it's so simple. I'm going to say this again for everybody. It's the AIR formula, so A-I-R, AIR formula for quotability. And that means that what you're saying or doing is actionable, interesting, and relevant. And that is so. Can you talk a little bit more about actionable? Because you've been giving examples of that, and you just said quotability. It's not just the words you say, but it's something that allows people to participate. Can you talk a little bit more about actionable?
If I see a message and invite people, or don't even invite, just say, this is what I'm going to do. It can be something as visual as saying, on this day, in commemoration of, I'm wearing a purple armband, and it's reflective at night. I'm just making this one up. I'm saying, and anybody who believes in this cause too, wrap something around you that you can see at night, and go walking somewhere that matters to you, and see who else is walking, and go up,
okay,
and
I think we might have,
instead of doing a high five,
Kari,
do an elbow.
For the moment.
Okay.
The moderator has left the conference.
Yeah, remember that thing I said about being booted off the call? I just got booted off the call, and I don't see Kari back on the call either. So give us a second here, and I'm going to try to figure out what is going on. If you're on the webcast, I would love it if you could type into the chat or the Q&A box, whichever one you feel like, and let me know if you can. I mean, obviously, if you can hear me, let me know. Oh, wait, I think that's Kari again. Kari, are you back?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I think we both got knocked off this call.
Well, hello again.
Well, hello again, and welcome back. I just asked. You know, I'm so good at turning this around now that when I get booted off the call, I can get back. It's like a record. I can get back on in about 10 seconds. Good. Tammy says she can hear me. And so I'm assuming if she can hear me, she can hear Kari. And let me just make sure everything is still going. Yes, I'm still recording. Okay. So I apologize. You know, technology, it can be a real pain in the butt. So Kari was telling us about the actionable piece of the AIR formula, and she had been giving an example of when you invite somebody to do something. For example, she was using the example of the purple armband that glows in the dark for a cause, and then we got cut off about that time. So can you continue on with that, Kari?
The things that I'm suggesting to people to get bragging rights is make it easy and becoming for other people to participate and prove that they share the view or to buy something towards that view. So I just came up with a Velcro armband that you could see at night, so you not only might do it in the day for a short time or at night, and that you, instead of high-fiving people, say to people, go touch your elbows. up above you, below, behind, with those people also wearing it, and acknowledge that you too share this view. Anything that's playful, fun, not dumb, and that there's some continuing part of the story. It might be that you create something that is dramatic as an iconic image or badge that people can put on digitally for a day on their sites. But the goal is to be specific in something, and where possible, I call it the rule of three, to have two other unlikely allies who share that view, so the three of you together are holding up a prop or calling for the action, doing it visually together and or verbally and or online somewhere. That goes to the interestingness in air.
I love that. So I'm just going to kind of repeat kind of what you're talking about here, because I think this is really important. And the truth is it involves a little bit of creativity that, you know, maybe some people aren't as willing to put the effort into doing things like this. And if you want to be quotable and you want to be memorable, there's a little effort that you have to put in. And thank you, Tammy Adam, for saying that you can hear both of us. Thank you. That gives me some peace of mind at the moment. So I appreciate that you have to be, you have to kind of, this is a cliche, I suppose, to get outside of the box or get out of your comfort zone for what is maybe typically a way that you would try to get people to, in fact, we hear this all the time, you know, put something on the web that goes viral. But again, nobody really tells us how to go viral. And what Kari is explaining is how to go viral by giving people something to participate in, make it easy for them and fun and playful. And it's not that hard to do that, but you may have to get a little bit outside of your comfort zone to go there. Would you say that?
I don't know if it's comfort zone. Whenever we focus on something, it's like focusing on a blank screen and trying to write something. I call it sideline glancing. It's to look around and see ideas of interestingness, how someone's doing something, whether they intend to be interesting or not, and think, oh, I can do that. I can customize it here. I think our intent is to draw something. And I just thought of a specific idea because Jonah Berger wrote a book called Contagious that's quite good. I wrote about it in my Forbes column. And if you attach, for example, something you want them to buy to something that's familiar to them. So, for example, I just forgot it. This, there's a candy bar, and they can, coffee break and the name of the candy bar, Kit Kat and coffee break. So because they attach the habit to adding the Kit Kat, whenever people are having coffee, they're more likely to remember that. So that I'm suggesting, for example, if you look at the parts of your body, and I'll keep it to the clean, non-provocative parts, you just might hold up your thumb and just say, push back when you see people shaming others. Stand up, and then you put your pointing finger, and I just made this up. Stand up, for say that's wrong. They just did a mistake, because shaming is a big issue these days. But whenever anybody sees someone put their thumb up, they're going to remind themselves, oh, my, I remember when they said push back with the thumb and point up, take a stand with the pointing finger. So think of habits or objects we wear or things that are familiar to us and attach your action or your meaning to them. Another one was famous, and I love it. I called nudges when they want people to become healthy by walking up the stairs to the next floor instead of taking the escalator. So they turned the stairs into what looked like a piano keyboard.
Yes.
And for 2 months, the piano keyboard, when you actually walked on the steps, it was technologies were added. So as I walked on each step, I heard a different piano tone. So people loved walking up and down the steps and around. And then got in the habit of doing it when the piano tones left. So there's ideas all around us if we attach something familiar to something that matters to us.
I love that. I remember that piano keyboard staircase. And speaking of something going viral, that was one of those things that went viral. And I can see how, well, maybe the people who were watching the video of the piano keyboard. I'm not sure how. Well, maybe this is something you can talk about. So the people who were inspired to walk up and down the stairs, even after the piano keyboard was gone, obviously they were walking on the piano keys and making music. How does that affect somebody out here like me watching a video of that? Does that have some sort of impact on me as well?
We don't know for sure because it's impossible to try to do a study of that because it could be anywhere. We do know that when you are in motion, you remember things better. In motion, you are more emotional, both good and bad. So the times that you're out walking, for example, you're more likely to remember something you see. And whether you're driving, you're in motion, you're more likely than when you're sitting still and not moving. So that gives you insights about some of the atmosphere that happens that makes this more visual and makes it more memorable.
That's an interesting, so this, and this goes along, I think, with, well, with actionable, your AIR formula, that if you can find a way to get people to do something, to literally move their bodies in some way, like you talked about the thumb or the elbow, it sounds like if you can get people to associate some or to take action in some sort of movement or to associate some sort of movement with an idea, that will also help them remember it.
Exactly. And if they take some small motion of any kind, they're more likely to take a second or third. The longer it takes for them to participate, the less likely that they will at all and be remembered. That's why even the motion of walking in a door, opening that door, what happens afterwards is more memorable. I do things called storyboarding, the scene-by-scene action you have in a place. And if I'm opening the door and I walk in, and the carpet feels different inside, and two people are smiling at me, and there's full-spectrum lights. All those three things make me feel good and look better. Therefore, I actually view the people I see next as more attractive, caring, and smart. So emotion sparks emotion for good and for bad.
Right. I hope that those of you who are listening right now are thinking of some ways that you can incorporate this. I know some of you who are on the call right now, and this is the way I think. I start thinking of how you can apply these things. I'm picturing those of you who I know and thinking, oh, I bet so and so could do this, and ask, you know, people, every time you're thinking about this thing, get up and walk into the next room, or I don't know. I'm just sort of throwing something out there. But I would love, as we go along in the call, I would love for anybody who's on the chat or in the Q&A to share any ideas that you have that where you think you could apply some of these tips that Kari is giving. I would love to hear that. Or if you're on the phone, maybe at the end of the call, some of you might want to share something that you're thinking of that might apply some of the ideas that Kari is sharing with us. Kari, since we're on the AIR formula, would you talk a little bit about relevant?
Well, the closer it relates to actual situations in my life that I have, the more likely I am to remember it in the moment and later on. So, for example, I work with a lot of hospitals, and a hospital room does not have to look sterile. And if there's ways that room actually looks more like a room at home, people feel better about it. So this is just top of my mind, but I say, I want the hospital room to look familiar to me, not foreign. I believe that's going to help me get better soon. I believe in the compared to what and the relevance. So in starting that, the hospital says, we're making our hospital more comfortable for the staff and the patients by making parts of it look more like a home. Because we are the friends and family serving you while you're here. So I'm just making that up. See, compared to what is one of the most powerful ways I think you can show relevance. For example, I happen to work with people in San Quentin Prison that's near me, and we talk about the compared to what they're going to have when they describe something on the outside. And they say, few people have the forced discipline and choice as those of us in prison who don't get out of our cells for years. which happens to some people, not in San Quentin, but others, so mm-hmm. that we can either become more focused or more distracted. So then mm-hmm. they can compare that to something else and say, if someone is an athlete, they're doing sprints around the track, that's a clarity focus compared to us. My goal when I get out is to take the focused discipline I've had to do it in another way, working in a co-working space where I help people stay focused with the people around them and focused with their project in that convivial workspace.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's characterizing what you've done, what could be in a negative way, but in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it all comes down to the specific detail that proves the general conclusion. And also how you say something where it lifts people up so they want to aspire to be something. So a famous one in Texas was, instead of saying stop littering when there was increasing littering along the freeway, they wanted to tap into Texans' pride about being Texas. And they had these big signs that said, don't mess with Texas. And they had a garbage can with the stuff in it. So people are proud to say, I'm not going to mess with Texas. So how do you aspire to be something that lifts people up, how you assume their better side so that they want to do something different? I'm walking outside, so the other phone, you can't hear it as much.
Okay. I love that, Kari, because I come from a place of being positive and optimistic, and I like to work with people in that positive way. I realize we all have things we could get better at. We all have challenges. And I don't want to pretend that those challenges don't exist. But at the same time, I like to help my clients and my audiences focus on the things about them that are already strong and already powerful and that they may not be recognizing about themselves, and find those positive things inside and those unique things inside and bring those out and acknowledge them as good. And so I love this idea of saying something in a way that lifts people up instead of something that sounds negative and punishing, to say something to people that makes them want to be part of it and want to sort of fit in with that group of other people who are proud or successful or whatever it is you're trying to get them to relate to.
Lisa,
I love that concept. Uh-huh.
One, though, the research shows that even if they aren't yet acting that way, it's one thing and very helpful to help identify a strength they have positively.
Mm-hmm.
Separately as well is to praise people or do what I call a presumptive close, to act as if they are already acting better,
mm-hmm.
even if they're not, and especially. That's what the don't mess with Texas thing is to do. And people actually, when they're praised for something that they've not yet done, are more likely to do it. But the parallel to that is Americans, we're into positivity and being upbeat, which has a horrible downside when people really are honestly lonely or
right.
feeling left out. So I think there are times, too, and I'm talking about the growing number of people who are not able to die the way they want.
Mm.
And so there are three startups where there's a startup that helps people who are friends and family of someone to take turns being of comfort and presence to those people. And I think it's important in quotability as well to say, if I was in your shoes, this would be a time when a lot's on your mind. And I want to see where you want to take the conversation. What do you want to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a way to be candid and leave an opening for people to talk about when they're unsettled and say, let's see if there's a path forward or what. I want to be a listening ear. Yesterday, somebody who always has deeply moved me, Dave Isay, won the TED Prize. He's the founder of
mm-hmm.
StoryCorps. And what he's done is he said storytelling is about listening. And I just want to just say briefly, because I feel this so much, I've cried several times, listening to the audio interviews he set up where they train people to interview two people who know each other well about an incident and a person who changed their life. Ordinary Americans, they say, the ones that are often forgotten or their stories aren't heard. And I tied it to someone who's African-American and grew up as a teenager, whereas teenagers, they went to a white skating rink, and the man said they couldn't skate. And the police were called, and the police said, you either shut down the rink or you let them skate. And years later, when she looked at the newspaper coverage of it, it omitted two things. When that owner shot a gun up at the ceiling, and when her aunt, fierce aunt that she was, stood up to him. So the key thing is, our storytelling is a way of sharing stories that otherwise aren't heard or forgotten. Don't leave it to somebody else. So when someone is talking from their heart about the specific details, the gunshots up, and she says, my mother wrote on the newspaper, and I read it years later in her pink pen, he shot at us. But the newspaper doesn't say it. So those specific details prove the general conclusion, and the best ways to be quotable are when you're citing other people you deeply admire, not yourself, and you then cite the lesson that relates to that. It's like when the Barcelona game happened, when they're playing soccer, and an African background person from Latin America had a banana thrown down at his feet.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrifying. And he lifted it up nonchalantly, took a bite, threw it down, and went back to playing. And he made the pie bigger of the audience, because all of a sudden these people, instead of the few that were acting racist, the majority stood up for what he did and thought, and so it was tweeted all over. Choose how you want to act. Choose the words you say. Choose the part of yourself you want to stand up for. But most of all, choose the people you want to cite and put them in the story first and say it was because of them that I was able to. You can tell I feel strongly about this. It's about mutuality.
I can tell. Yeah, you're very passionate.
Well, there so many people are talking about create a network, build a constituency, have more of a following. It's sort of like saying, oh, I want to be likable so they like me so that I have them as part of my stuff. And instead, when there's a mutuality mindset and you prove that you heard somebody, and you suggest a sweet spot, and they say, well, it's not quite that, but it might be this, and you listen, and you're iterative, that kind of quotability means you both feel heard. And that's where things scale. And that's where you can accomplish something better than someone else.
Can you say that again? No, I want you to say it again, because I lost you for a minute. I don't know if other people did, but I lost you. I want to make sure it gets on the recording. So you were talking about when people have a mutuality mindset, and then you cut out right there. So please share that again.
When you're willing to actively listen to someone else and notice where they feel strongest, and you ask a question and you clarify to make sure you understand it, then suggest a sweet spot of mutual interest. Say, it may be we share an interest in that, and say why. And they say, well, actually, it's not quite that, but it's this. So you're not trying to tell them. You're trying to listen closely and together come up with a shared interest, especially if there's other places you disagree or you have a different background. Those are the most valuable allies that make life meaningful, because when you take a stand together, you're going to see different ways to have a lens on the situation, different ways to characterize it. And I believe the future, when they talk about leadership, I don't really care about leaders. I care about people who are opportunity makers, who actually have diverse, cultivated friends, who trust them on certain issues. So they're the ones that can form a team faster, to solve problems faster and better, and to seize opportunities. Quotability, from a point of that shared sighting of each other, that's the future, especially in a connected, complex world.
And I just want to let everybody know that these super interesting – Tammy, yes, I'm going to share my ideas with you. I'm totally thinking about you. Kari's notes are things that she's telling us right now about mutuality. If you want to hear more about this mutuality mindset and what she's talking about, please watch her TED Talk, because this is what she talks about. And it's really inspiring, and especially for those of us who really want, you know, we go out there and we say, we want to help people. We want to change the world. We want to help people transform their lives. And yeah, you know, doing that, you can't really do that on your own. The more we partner, the more we think of how we can help others, how we can make opportunities for other people and work together to create these kinds of opportunities, that's how you get things done. Is that right, Kari?
It is. And here's my big caveat. It's not helping. I know this is controversial, but it's finding a sweet spot where you're helpful for each other, you co-create. And this is not quid pro quo. It's not a taker,
uh-huh.
as Adam Grant talks about in Give and Take. It's being willing to find the common ground because it's increasingly rare. We know from the book Speak
mm-hmm.
Sort and going to extremes. And so then there's an ebb and flow support over time. But you learn about each other from that point of connection. So you're less irritated when they don't act right like you. Because we've all been plagued by people who are unhelpfully helpful, or keep on helping and get irritated, you don't help them back the way they want. The art is in the mutuality.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty is that instead of being frustrated by someone else, you're fascinated by the differences. And in fact, you can kid each other about it over time, say, well, I got that one wrong. Oh, you sure did, but how about that? And there's a camaraderie and a trust and a playfulness, but a purposefulness. The people that are most valuable to me, and I hope me to them, are people that act different than me. I'm a fast thinker. Some of them are slow thinkers. That's not dumb or smart. It's a different way.
Mm-hmm,
I have an
mm-hmm.
optimistic bent. Some of them are pessimistic, but they see things more realistically. But most importantly, we disagree, in some cases strongly, about certain things, and we've been candid, and we've been able to say it. And then we say, well, let's go back to the part we agree on. And I've been changed in some of my views because of knowing them, and perhaps vice versa. That's
mm-hmm.
where the juice.
Yeah. There's something that you reminded me of, just kind of a small little example of what you're talking about co-creating rather than seeing it as I'm going to help you, you know, do something and finding common ground and how, and you said we've all been plagued by people who are unhelpfully helpful. I went to an event last week where there were about 100 people there and there were opportunities to go to the microphone and ask questions and to get some of your issues addressed by the person who was running the event. And she's a great coach, very, you know, very straightforward, good listener, you know, really, really giving great, great things for all of us to think about. And then what happened was, and she brought this up because her team noticed it, that when we would go to break, some of the people in the audience would go running up to those people who had spoken at the mic with a business card and run up to that person, you know, here, I can help you. You know, oh, I heard you mention this problem. And this happened to me. I will be, let me tell you what happened to me. I spoke at the microphone about my cats. It was something, you know, something that I see in my life that I want to be able to, you know, create a space where I can have as many animals, rescue as many animals as we want and not be worried about their medical care because we've had a lot of sick animals in the past. So anyway, I mentioned this thing at the microphone and sure enough, at a break in the afternoon, some guy who I have never met before, never had a conversation with, comes up to me and starts talking immediately. Oh, you're the one with the animals? Yeah, there's this kind of water that you should give your animals and they won't ever get sick or something like that. And, you know, there's a part of me that just wanted to say, dude, I have no idea who you are. I don't care about your water. But I'm not like that. That's not how I deal with it. But I immediately thought to myself, I'm never going to come to you for – I am instantly not interested in your product or whatever it is you're selling because you don't care about me. And it didn't feel like, Kari, what you're talking about mutuality. It just felt like I need to sell something to you right now, and I don't even know you, and I just have something that I've decided is going to, you know, is going to change your life. And so I think we, you know, a lot of us get really turned off by that, by the people who think that they can help us without knowing us and without taking any time to actively listen. And find that mutuality and find that common ground.
I can tell that you feel strongly about it, Lisa.
I do.
Who knows if it was his water or someone else's. We just have to give people that extra step, I guess. It doesn't mean to have a relationship. But you see, even if I don't know someone, if they offer me a tip that may be helpful, I want to say, let me look into it, or specifically, send me something about why cats will never get sick again. Then
right.
You're holding them off the way you want on it. We're all sort of finding our way in this world. And I do believe the number of people that reach out to us, and I know this a lot from all the PR people who send me stuff that doesn't relate to what I write about, it's a hot button for me that they don't say something that's helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
I get all kinds of invitations to drop by places in New York City when I told them I don't live there for things. But it's a struggle, and it's not the way we were raised necessarily, although some cultures are. But going back to the specific, I think it's generous of you to have me on the line, and I want to hear of others' specific ideas about how they say something so it seems to be vivid and work. And that mutuality, as you know, is the central passion of my life, about being opportunity makers with and for others.
Mm-hmm.
In my own halting way, practice it more myself. I'll say
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and you know, none of us is perfect, right? And when you know, the way you put that, how, even how I could have just been a little bit less annoyed by that guy and just thought, okay, well, you know, why don't I ask him to send me something? Because that way, I'm not just immediately shutting him down, but that I understand that he's maybe not quite as enlightened as I am, maybe, about how you actually help people.
But don't ask him to send you something. Say, sent, because people want to send brochures, and again, it's specificity.
Yeah.
Say,
yeah.
That's interesting that you have a water that will, and then repeat it after him. You have water, but if cats drink it, they'll never get sick. If you could send me something by email specifically citing that, I would like to know.
Right.
Sticks to that specificity.
Right.
Yeah.
So I could be more open-minded as well about the way people approach me, because I also am coming from a place of trying to connect people, trying to bring people together who I think are a good fit with each other, and it's not always necessarily helpful to me. But it's helpful to me to know that I'm putting people together who would be a good fit. And again, it's a mindset that we all have to work on. And you've just brought to my attention, you know, how I need to work on that more too, in terms of people who approach me in a way that I think of as wrong or, you know, rude or whatever it is. I could be more open to that. And I appreciate that.
We all have hot.
Yeah.
We all have hot buttons. But stick to the specific offer that he made. So then you're holding up that standard back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was suggesting. We all have hot buttons. We do.
Yep.
And the more we know what they are, we're less likely to be in reaction. People will speak in generalizations, but if they come up with a specific, respond to that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that idea. I would love to hear if anybody has some thoughts on what Kari has been sharing. Is anybody who's on the webcast or on the phone thinking about how you might, in order to, and keep in mind, what Kari's been talking about is not just words, right? It's not just using words to be quotable. Quotability is getting people to participate in something that you're offering. So some of the things Kari's mentioned, turning the stairs into the piano keyboard to get people to walk up and down the stairs, and doing things that are relevant, for example, making a hospital room look more like home, there's nothing there about words. There are no words to quote, but what it is that people are still going to share the message of those things. So I would love to know if anybody is thinking right now, while you're on the call, of something that you've done or something that you could do with your audience. I'm gonna open the phone line, and if anybody wants to share, I think a lot of you are actually on the webcast because you, like me, like to be able to type things into the the chat as you so desire, and not necessarily wait until the phone line opens up. But I've opened the phone line if anybody wants to jump in. If anybody wants to type into the chat, I'm going to take a second and just grab a little sip of water. So feel free to jump in, anybody who would like to. I'm not going to call on you, Tammy, but I'm going to refer to you as somebody who does tend to use these kinds of ideas in your newsletter. So I'll share a little bit about Tammy. Tammy is a therapist, and her specialty is working with women and stress. And she puts out this great newsletter every Sunday. And she tells these personal stories that are about her life and the things that she's experiencing in ways that when I read the stories, I can totally relate. And I'm reading this article that she's written in her newsletter about something that she's baking or something she's doing in the yard or something that's just happening in her life or some experience that she's had. And I so can relate to it. And then she has a lesson that ties into that thing. And so no matter what it is about working in the yard or a basket of socks, which I always bring up as one of my favorite articles that she's written, these things touch me as a human being and make me think about my own life and then teach me a particular lesson. And you can see how, I can just tell you how quotable, and again, not in words, but in visuals and in stories, how quotable Tammy is, because I use her examples a lot as ways of using analogies and stories to share a lesson. So that's one example that I see from the people who are on the call right now of somebody who is using these principles. And Tammy, you probably don't even realize it, but you're using these principles to help people relate to your stories in a human way and then want to share with other people as an example of how to deal with some particular situation of stress or anxiety, which is what you're focusing on. So I just wanted to share that, Tammy. I don't know if you have anything you want to say or type, because I just put you on the spot. And the line is still open if anybody else wants to jump in or type something into the Q&A or the chat. But that occurred to me. Just off the top of my head. Anybody else want to jump in with, even if you've heard of an interesting idea? Like, I love how Kari brought up the Twix, Kit Kat bar and the coffee break.
I'm going to have to go in a moment.
Sure, and we are just about, you know what, I keep looking at the wrong clock. I'm so sorry. My one clock says we have 3 minutes to go, and my computer clock says we have 1 minute. Kari, is there anything else, final note that you would like to share with our listeners before you take off?
Most of all, I'd love to hear your specific tips about how to be more deeply connected or widely quoted. And if you send them to me via the Say It Better site, I'd be honored, or anywhere else. I'm going to cite some of them in the book that I'm writing on Opportunity Makers.
That's exciting. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'll make sure that the people who aren't, because there are a lot of people who can't come to the call live and who will be listening to the recording. And so I'll make sure that everybody has the links knows how to reach you so that they can send you any ideas that they come up with that they'd like to share. And it would be really great to be cited in your book. Well, so we are at 2:00. I want to thank Kari for being here. I really, really appreciate her taking the time because she is an extremely busy person, as you can tell by all of her many accomplishments and the things that she's running around doing everywhere. And so I really appreciate Kari's being here. And just to finish up with logistics, this recording will be available until Monday, March 23rd. And after that, it becomes property of the Audience Avenger Alliance, where all of the other speaker series interviews are housed. And so there is a link on the left, as I said, about the Audience Avenger Alliance if you're interested in learning more and having access to a whole bunch of these really great interviews that I've done with people who have just amazing ideas about how to help you be better speakers, better communicators, better connectors with your audiences. So you'll get all of these links and all this information about Kari in the follow-up email. And Kari, thank you again so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, Lisa, I'm honored to be on your show, truly. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, everybody. I will see you on the web and by email, and I will catch up with you all soon. Take care.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.